Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
Atop the milkpacking district, in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson, alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now, as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
At least 45 people are dead throughout the South from tornadoes, flooding, storms, and hail. A Bend man stabs himself to death during an open mic night, and a Vancouver woman huffs nitrous during a police chase.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, steel yourselves for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon. I'm Don Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Monday, April 18th, 2011. A Vancouver woman was arrested for huffing nitrous oxide while leading police on a chase in southeast Portland on Friday. Oregon State Police say they saw a driver inhaling from a whipped cream dispenser with nitrous oxide canisters on I-205 near West Lynn just after noon on Friday. The trooper said he tried to stop the car on 82nd Drive. The driver made her way between 60 to 80 miles per hour. Police finally stopped the car near Southeast Washington Stark. Officers arrested 45-year-old Robin Ray Wick for DUI, reckless driving, and eluding police. She was also cited for having a suspended license.
Well, you may have heard of the Huffington Post, Don, but this is out of control.
We're really going to start Monday like that,
yes,
are we?
Yes, we are.
Really?
We have. It's too late. Can't be undone. The bell can't be unrung. All right. Why, hello. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. It is Monday, April 18th, 2011. Thank you for joining us. Coming up later on this hour, you got your entertainment news, also science on the march, and whatnot. You can also get this program via iTunes later on the day if you like. You can also get it as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or at legionofnews.com. It's available on your mobile device as well. That is mobile.cascadia.fm. That's mobile.cascadia.fm.
I realized too late that the appropriate wacky morning show response to that should have been, oh, Rick.
Or just sort of a belly laugh.
That's followed by a
and finally.
It's funny because it's true.
That's right.
Yeah. Severe weather in the South in recent days, including tornadoes, thunderstorms, flooding, and hail, have killed at least 45 people, officials said on Monday. The count may rise as recovery efforts continue. Some forecasters expect another round of severe weather to hit the Central Plains and the Mississippi and Ohio valleys on Tuesday. Bill Deeger of AccuWeather.com said, beginning late today and tonight, a small area from eastern Kansas to western Kentucky could have a few localized gusty storms before a more widespread weather, severe weather threat unfolds. The Midwest is also expected to get a mix of snow and rain around the Great Lakes, and flood warnings are in effect along and near the Ohio River in Indiana, Kentucky, and Illinois. North Carolina accounted for the bulk of casualties and property losses from the weekend weather, with 22 people killed and about 130 others injured. Half of the state's tornado deaths happened there. County manager Z. Lamb says his community has not had to deal with severe weather like this in around 30 years.
We're used to hurricanes around here. We're used to floods. We're used to small tornadoes. We're not used to the kind of weather pattern that came through on Saturday that resulted in the loss of 11 lives.
I don't want to make light of the situation, but I mean...
But then his brothers, Daryl and Daryl...
No, why do you got to make it all personal?
Just like that guy.
Why do you got to hate? What I was going to say is, Dawn, if I was a guy in a message board, I'd go, before I engage in an ad hominem response, Dawn, what I was going to say is, it's interesting that his response is presumably?
Yeah, I think he did.
And it doesn't matter that he's going to talk about how, you know, this is nothing that they've ever seen before. They're just not used to this kind of weather. You know, normally it's a very placid and mild place.
We're used to hurricanes around here. We're used to floods. We're used to small tornadoes.
But this bad weather we've been having, it's out of control. I just don't know how to describe it.
Well, the surge began in Oklahoma on Thursday, where, you know, all storms begin. Oklahoma is the birthplace of tornadoes, I think.
And then, Chris Gaines.
And then moved through the south and hit the East Coast by Saturday. There were 241 tornadoes reported, with 50 actually confirmed.
That's officially too much.
Yes. So Lamb describes the twister's destructive path.
It hit the land at about a half a mile to three quarters of a mile and continued for about 7, 8, 9 miles. And everything in its way was pretty much destroyed.
I mean, I don't really know because it's, you know, I'm not like a weatherologist or the whatever you call it. But it seems like, and again, obviously they would know better than I because they live there and whatnot. But it seems like, again, if you're used to...
We're used to hurricanes around here. We're used to floods. We're used to small tornadoes.
It seems like a hurricane itself does a lot of damage. And, a flood, that's not really like a walk in the park. So I'm not saying that they should, you know, that there's any way you can prevent it, because there's nothing you can really do about a tornado. If, you know, God wants to smite you, you're smote. It does seem, though, that they ought to just be sort of battle-hardened to this kind of thing by now, I would think. You know, really.
Also, and I know that it's simplifying the problem
and the
lives of a lot of people, but I think I'm not alone in wondering when you hear someone say, we're used to hurricanes, we're used to tornadoes, you think, why do you still live there?
Yeah.
Lamb says many residents were left homeless. He has details from a preliminary damage assessment conducted yesterday.
We lost 67 homes that were totally destroyed, another 15 or 20 that were substantially damaged.
Well, all right, then. By the way, somebody says they would also know better than you because you're not a weatherologist.
Yes.
That's not actually what you call it. It's my patented, colorful way of using the English language.
A weathermatologist. I'm not one of them.
It's not unlike when Jen Lane refers to her fuel gauge as being a gasometer, which I find sort of endearing. Hey, does anybody know, were the Barfly Awards this weekend?
Yes.
Did Sarah win Best Drunk?
No.
What?
She didn't.
This is an outrage!
And she said she was okay with that because I think she's reached a point in her life where she doesn't necessarily want to be known as Best Drunk in town.
She's just being modest. That ruins my whole thing, because what I was going to do is I had this whole thing that I dreamed up for her this weekend just because, you know, because I can't really ever turn my brain off. The most I can do is just sort of, the most I can really ever do is put it down like some sort of diversionary culvert. So I had this idea that if she won the Best Drunk Award, which, let's be honest, I mean, it just seemed like it was a lock.
Yeah.
A shoe-in. Did Bobby win?
I don't know. I have no idea.
Well, in any event.
I didn't actually make it to the awards. I was going to go, but I didn't make it.
I was going to suggest that if she won the Best Drunk Award, that she then put out a press release saying that she was going to remove her name from future contenders. If she was nominated in the future, she would not accept. That she felt it was unfair to remain in the competition because it probably discouraged other competitors and entrants. You know, if they saw that she was going to be competing, why even get out of bed?
That's
true. That's a whole publicity thing I dreaded. She'd been robbed.
A 41-year-old man remained in critical condition yesterday after he was shot in the head several times Friday evening. The Coos County Major Crime Team and other county law agencies arrested the man's brother-in-law, Jose Perez. Perez admits to firing the shots. The incident occurred at a residence in Arago. Do you know where Arago is? It's somewhere near Coos Bay.
I'm just back on Jose Perez. Isn't Jose Perez also the name of somebody significant?
Jose Perez.
Isn't there somebody...
I think you think of Rosie Perez.
No, and I'm not thinking of Perez Hilton. Yes, Rosie Perez was one of...
It's a Perezologist. I'm no Perezologist,
I wish I could do a Rosie Perez voice. But then again, I'm so glad that I can't. All right, well, in any event. So, you know, brother-in-laws, they're the source of most of the trouble in this world. Let's just be honest about that.
Is there something you want to share?
No, I'm just saying, it's like every time you hear about some guy's deadbeat in-law, it's always brother-in-law.
That's true.
Mother-in-laws kind of nag, and father-in-laws never really approve, and sister-in-laws can be kind of cranky. But whenever you hear about, oh, my goddamn deadbeat blank in-law, it's always the brother-in-law. Brother-in-laws are just, they're just no good.
Yeah.
They're just, and I know that everybody is, you know, most people are somebody's brother-in-law, but I'm just saying, from my perspective, that's really where most of the trouble lies. Billy Joel, embezzled by brother-in-law. That's what I'm saying. Mm. There you go.
So I don't have the brother. Do the husbands of your sisters-in-law count as your brother-in-law? I was going to say I don't have any brother-in-laws, but well, my husband has sisters, but they're married. So do they count as brothers-in-law to me, or because they're like a whole in-law removed?
I don't know. No, I have no response to that. No, I got nothing.
All right.
You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Still to come this hour, entertainment news, also science on the march. Next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program today featuring Geek Watch, Clergy Watch, Taser Watch. Mr. Aaron Duran will also join us with another installment of the Week in Geek. That is coming. We'll get a recap of everything that happened at Stumptown Comics Fest over the weekend. And also, we want to welcome, speaking of far-flung places, it's only, like, moderately flung. We want to welcome a new listener and new subscriber to the Rick Emerson Show, Eric in Vernonia. So, Eric in Vernonia, where apparently they now have internet and chairs and everything.
Oh, good for them.
So, well done, Eric in Vernonia. So that is Eric in Vernonia joining us today as a Rick Emerson Show subscriber. You, too, can listen for the low cost of just 32 cents a day, and you will be better for it. And is at rickemersonshow.com, where your first week, of course, is free. So that is Eric and Vernonia. Thank you. That begins about an hour from now at rickemersonshow.com. Here's Don Taylor.
Open mic night at Strictly Organic Coffee in Bend, Oregon, ended in horrific tragedy Thursday night when 19-year-old Kip Rusty Walker took his own life in front of the crowd.
Where was this at?
In Bend.
Okay, so it's local enough that I can't really make light of it.
No.
I shouldn't make it. Okay.
Walker was playing the keyboard for a crowd of nearly 15 people at the Strictly Organic Coffee Company.
I don't think crowd is really the...
No, not really. When his performance took a tragic turn, Walker, who would have turned 20 in a week, stood up, said nothing, and then began stabbing himself in the chest over and over again.
Wait, hold on. So this guy, Walker...
Yes.
Is playing keyboard at an open mic night.
At a coffee house, yes.
At a coffee house for a crowd.
A crowd of
15 people.
Nearly 15 people.
What is nearly 15?
I don't know. 12.
Is 12 nearly 15? Where's the dividing line there?
Well, because that would say like a dozen people. So it's probably
13?
13 or 14.
Okay. Yeah. Somewhere between 12 and 15 people.
Yes.
All right. And so then did he finish the song and then go, and now for my encore?
I don't know. I'm unsure if he finished the song or not.
Did you say he stabbed himself?
He stood up and just started stabbing himself over and over again in the chest.
Okay.
Ronnie Ely, who owns the coffee house, was not at the open mic night, but her staff had told her what happened. She said, it was really unclear at first what was happening. You know, it is an open mic and it's a performance, so people at first thought it was some sort of theater.
Uh-huh.
It was a double-edged type blade knife, said a police carney, police sergeant Chris Carney. Where that knife came from on his person, the witnesses didn't notice where it came from. A friend said it was almost like he wanted to prove a point, like there's no point in being scared of death because it's going to happen to us anyway.
Somebody is asking if he was performing an Elliott Smith tribute show.
Oh.
Zam. Sort of Elliott Smith meets Keyboard Cat.
One of his friends said that he was sad by it, but he wasn't particularly surprised. He said, I saw it coming for a while. I've been preparing for it. I'm sad, but it's like a whirlwind of emotions. Because apparently a friend said had been asked if he'd done anything to stop him, and he said really that there was nothing he could do.
He's got a knife. Let somebody else stop. Don't be a hero.
Walker threatened to kill himself again back on March 20th, and a friend called his parents, and then he was taken to the psychiatric unit at St. Charles Medical Center in Bend, where he spent a few days.
Is he dead?
Apparently not all of it. Yes, he's dead. He stabbed himself quite dead.
I was going to say, is he dead? Because if not, then I can make fun of it. But now I think maybe it's the other way around. If he's dead, maybe I can make fun, because life is for the living and so forth.
Yeah, it's kind of horrible, but at the same time, it's just the most ridiculous way to commit suicide.
That's a weird open mic night.
A sad, pathetic open mic night in front of
15 people.
Between 12 and 15 people.
Not even 15. Somewhere approaching 15 people.
A crowd of nearly 15 people.
I wonder if he'd done like several open mic nights in the past. And it was like waiting for the big crowd, and it was like 7 people, 4 people, 9 people, 1 person, just the bartender, 15 people. This is it, my moment in the sun. And then he,
I just keep thinking maybe he's done a few open mic nights, and he thought, okay, tonight's the night. If they still don't like me, that's it.
If that guy down front talks during my song, like
if this isn't the night they love me, then that's it. The knife is, Mr. Stabby is coming out of my pocket.
If he talks during my touching tribute to Don Francisco one more time, you'll note that I all right, let me see if I can, hey, thanks for coming out tonight. Let me just, all right, let me take a stab at this next one. I didn't do that. I'm above that sort of thing.
Real estate developer Donald Trump sees his wealth as a selling point over potential presidential contender Mitt Romney. Trump says he's a bigger businessman than Romney.
My net worth is many, many, many times Mitt Romney. And I don't know Mitt Romney. I really don't know him.
Many times Mitt Romney is not an actual mathematic figure. Even I know this.
Is that like counting your Twitter followers in milliwheatons?
Yes, that's exactly what it is. Are you making that up?
No, that's a real thing.
Awesome. You can't. Yeah, he's not a hectare. He's not a unit of measurement, I don't think. I could be wrong, but...
Trump says if he runs, he won't be doing it for himself.
I built a very big net worth, and I'd like to put that ability, and I've always had an ability to do that. And I'd like to put that ability, perhaps, if I decide to go, perhaps I would love to put that ability to work for this country.
Well, okay then.
All right then, yes.
Oh, it doesn't matter to me. I mean,
in the meantime, watch him on The Celebrity Apprentice with Meatloaf and Gary Busey.
Boy, apparently, did you see that huge meltdown that Meatloaf had?
No, I just watched a couple of minutes. I just saw just a couple of minutes of it last night, just enough to see Gary Busey do his talking to the camera thing, going, "People think I'm crazy. I don't know why they think, but if they want to think that, that's fine. Now, this is my imitation of a cat."
Yeah, he's
kind of like, I love Gary Busey.
I dig that guy. I've only watched, I think I only watched the first season of Celebrity Apprentice. It was the one that had, was it the one that had Gene Simmons? No, I guess I watched two seasons of it, because there was one that had Gene Simmons and the one that was before that, and the cast is sort of escaping me. I didn't really watch that show, but I did watch the section where Meatloaf just had a complete and total implosion, which did not seem fabricated or done for the camera. He seems authentically crazy, and has for some time. And I think that is sort of I think that's underscored by that performance that he did that Sarah saw a few weeks ago at the casino at the coast, where he just apparently had some meltdown on stage or something. So,
there's this point where I turned it on and I just saw enough to see that it was like the guys from Omaha Steaks talking about like how they wanted everyone to like put together these marketing plans and film. Created film commercials for Omaha Steaks, and they're panning across the faces, and I'm seeing the horrible snakehead of Star Jones and Lil Jon and Meatloaf and Gary Busey, and I just thought, you know, I don't think the rest of the show could possibly get better than this moment right here.
No,
of just guys talking about steaks and then showing the people who are going to do it, and I just go, ha-ha, and have my laugh, then I'm done.
You know, the thing is, like, the people you would think would be good on that show never are. It's never with the exception of Gene Simmons, who I predicted would be brilliant and who was. But it's the people that you just expect nothing from are just, God, who was it? It wasn't Clint Black. Maybe it was. But it was like Trace Atkins or somebody. It was like some country guy. And it's like, what do you really expect from that? And he was just like a Jedi at the whole thing. I mean, the only reason I would watch Celebrity Apprentice this season is if I was guaranteed. Like, I would have to wait till it was over. And if somebody guaranteed me that Star Jones would lose, And then we'd just begin to blubber, so to speak, uncontrollably on camera. If I could just have a front row seat to her mental collapse and implosion, that would actually be deeply satisfying.
She always looks like she's just about to like tear someone's head off and then just eat their entrails.
Solo.
Yes, exactly.
That's like the second time this month I've done that, but it was totally worth it both times.
Except she's not fat. She just looks like a horrible lizard thing.
Now, here's the thing, though. See, you say she's not fat, but as John Bender said in The Breakfast Club, you know, there are two kinds of fat people. You know, the fat people and the thin people who you became fat. She is sort of like the fat person who is right now being crammed into some artificially thin body. And you can see the fat person just going like, just straining at the seams. Like, I can tell you.
That would possibly explain why she looks so angry all of the
time. Dude, Sturgeon, her skin is screaming with every step she takes.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and it's like that is one of these days there's going to be like a sound. And she's just going to, like, unbuckle. And she's just going to be huge again. Because you're right. I mean, it's like, I'm not knocking her for, you know, whatever. Be skinny, be fat, whatever. But she's, you can tell that, like, something unnatural happened to her body to get her that way that quickly. Like, she's not supposed to look the way she does.
No.
So, you know, I'm just saying.
Well, a group of lawmakers and conservative activists say the administration needs to start paying more attention to adult pornography.
I am paying enough attention to adult pornography for most people.
Well, you're not in the administration.
Well, not yet.
In a little notice
move. Sounds like I'm qualified.
Attorney General Eric Holder closed down. Closed down the Obscenity Prosecution Task Force, a unit set up during the Bush administration to combat obscenity. It was set up due to pressure from conservatives about the proliferation of pornographic images on the internet and never really had much success, but critics insist the move is a perfect example of how the White House has turned a blind eye to the issue. The Justice Department insists it's not giving up, but concedes that its priority involves child pornography, since the multi-billion-dollar industry is now ubiquitous. Although the law against obscene material that violates community standards is still in effect, it's much more difficult to find a jury these days that would be shocked by pornographic images that don't involve children.
Which industry is ubiquitous?
The child pornography industry.
I don't think somebody knows what ubiquitous means.
No, I don't think. I think they might have meant, like, proliferating or something.
Or, you know.
Extensive. Flourishing.
Yeah, or extensive or large.
No, ubiquitous means, like, it's everywhere.
Air is ubiquitous.
Yeah.
Atoms are ubiquitous.
You know, you might get away with sort of semi-ironically saying that Starbucks is ubiquitous. Child porn, not really.
No.
I can go weeks at a time, months even, without seeing any child porn.
I thought that the pornography thing was set up under Reagan. I thought that was the whole Ed Meese thing.
No.
But maybe they dissembled it and then, I can't imagine Bill Clinton putting a lot of time towards stamping out pornography. But, you know, what do I know?
Pornography, well... Yeah. There was. I wish I had the story in front of me. There is some guy that is. There was just a story this weekend about a lawmaker who's rampaging against pornography right and left all the time, and then was just caught looking at porn on his laptop while he was you know, in session.
I totally saw that. I saw that story in the Drudge Report this weekend. Yeah.
A 6-year-old Oregon boy crashed his family's van into several mailboxes before colliding head-on with another driver on Sunday. The boy said he was hungry and wanted to get some food. Just after 7 a.m., emergency responders were called to a crash on Bristol Avenue near Fargo Street in the suburbs of Klamath Falls. Upon arrival, trooper Sabrina Criswell discovered one of the drivers involved was a boy who had taken his mother's Plymouth Voyager. He left the family's apartment alone and headed westbound on Bristol Avenue. He hit some mailboxes and then swerved into the eastbound lane where he crashed head-on into a Dodge Dakota pickup. Tammy J. Blau, 29, of Klamath Falls, was driving the pickup. She suffered minor injuries. The boy was not injured, even though he was not using safety restraints. He said he was hungry, so he'd grabbed a roll of pennies from home and wanted to take the van to go get some food.
He's how old?
6.
How did his feet even touch the floor? I mean, it's got to be one heck of a pneumatic seat there, because it's like
he wasn't seat belted, so he may have just been like crouched down and like steering and maybe trying to peek over the dashboard, and that's why he kept crashing into things.
Holding onto the wheel like he was doing some belay on K2.
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
New rules are in effect for air traffic controllers in an effort to keep
the new rule is don't sleep.
Yeah. Stop it. Stop doing
Wake
that.
Wake up.
U.S. Transportation. U.S. Transportation Secretary Ray LaHood told Fox News on Sunday the controllers will now have a minimum of 9 hours off between shifts.
We're also going to ask the managers in these control towers to be more available in the early morning hours and also in the late hours to make sure that they remind controllers that they can't sleep on the job, that they need to be alert, that safety is the number one priority.
To remind them.
Do you really need to remind them of that?
Not wake them up if they accidentally fall asleep or to be there in case somebody is unconscious unexpectedly. Just to remind them that it's not appropriate to sleep while they're on the job as air traffic controllers. Yeah.
Oh, Jim, no. Remember.
Page 74 of the rule book, Jim.
We're not supposed to do. Oh, that's right.
Predator, don't hit people in the head with your penis.
Lahoud says controllers will have a minimum of 9 hours off between shifts and can no longer be put on unscheduled midnight shifts following a day off.
I'm going to make sure we put in place everything possible so that controllers are alert, well-rested, well-trained, and they do take personal responsibility for their obligations to fly to guide planes in and out of airports.
They should totally hire somebody just to walk around with an air horn. And just the instant that your head just nods forward, they're just right behind you.
You know, we had a rule. There was a rule that you couldn't be scheduled to start another shift any sooner than like 12 hours after you finished your last one. When I worked at Starbucks.
Yeah.
Don't you think that it would just have stood to reason that they would have something like that for air traffic controllers?
Well, I suppose. Maybe that's something their union can address. Ooh,
I was
no.
just making frappuccinos.
Yeah.
I wasn't landing jumbo jets.
I do like the idea that it's a thing that they consider there's some flexibility to that rule. That it's more of a guideline.
Really?
It's a suggestion.
Ideally, guys would not be too sleepy.
I mean, really.
To land the plane.
In a perfect world, sure. We'd all be awake at our jobs. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. By the way, Mr. Roberts did not win. What was he nominated for?
For Most Good Writer.
Patrick Coleman.
Oh, Patrick Coleman.
And that's who?
Patrick Coleman is the now no longer there food writer for the Mercury.
Ah, okay.
He was the food writer. He's a terrific guy and a very good writer.
Okay.
So,
well, he apparently stole it away in the words of somebody. But
he's now writing for the online blog Thrillist.
That is Thrill IST.
Yeah.
Thrillist. All right. So yeah, Patrick Coleman. He apparently won, but it sounds like it was neck and neck.
Yeah.
So all right.
Let's do our science.
All right. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Don't forget the Rick Emerson radio program next hour featuring Geek Watch, Clergy Watch, Taser Watch, and The Week in Geek with Mr. Aaron Duran plus a top five. What is now, I had prepared a top five, but I'm actually going to be delaying mine anyway because Ryan White, music editor from The Oregonian, is flying. He is in transit today. Presuming that the air traffic controllers are all there and awake and everything,
right.
He'll land safely, and then, or they'll at least foam the runway.
Or
and
it won't then, run into a tornado.
Yeah, and then he'll be in later this week, and I'll do my top five. So you were going to do a top five today. What is your top five?
My top five are the top five songs I was forced to listen to around the house by my parents.
Excellent.
When I was growing up.
So we'll get to that next hour at rickemersonshow.com. It is time for Science on the March, brought to you by Squires Electric. You can find out more about them at squireselectric.com or 503-252-1609. That is 503-252-1609. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, they can make your life easier. What does that mean, you ask? It means that, you know, I mean, even if you know a little bit about electricity or you know a lot about electricity, you probably got better things to do in your life, you know, than just because knowing about electricity and how, you know, how to fix something that's wrong in the wiring of your home. Just knowing it is, I mean, they say it's like half the battle. It's really only like 40% of the battle because it's like you have to tear the wall out and you have to like, you know, pull all the wiring out and you got to turn everything off and then you got to like, you know, you got to figure out the workaround while you're getting that fixed, and then you got to like go buy the supplies, and you got to get it put in, you got to test it, you got to like put it back inside, you got to put the sheetrock back up. I mean, it's just a huge. It's like a creamy center that comes surrounded by lots and lots and lots of layers of unpleasant work. So even if you understand electricity, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, you're an American. Why should you do your own work? Have people do that for you. You contact them at 503-252-1609. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors, and good folks, and supporters and business partners of this Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. So find them at 503-252-1609. Please tell me you heard it here or at SquiresElectric.com, proud sponsors of Science on the March.
Scientists from Keele University in the UK have found that letting forth a volley of foul language can have a powerful pain-killing effect, especially for people who do not normally use expletives. To test the theory, student volunteers placed their hands in a bucket of ice-cold water while swearing repeatedly. They then repeated the exercise, but instead of swearing, used a harmless phrase instead.
I love science.
Researchers found the students were able to keep their hands submerged in the icy water for longer when repeating the swear word, establishing a link between swearing and an increase in pain tolerance.
Yeah, well, it releases endorphins and whatnot.
They also found that the pain-numbing effect was four times more likely to work in the volunteers who did not normally use bad language. The team believes the pain-lessening effect occurs because swearing triggers the fight-or-flight response. The accelerated heart rates of the students repeating the swear word may indicate an increase in aggression in the classic fight-or-flight response of downplaying feebleness in favor of a more pain-tolerant machismo.
I think that's why they always say that it's the whole thing about in martial arts, the where you shout a thing and, you know.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Or do that, sure.
Yeah.
Or you become a Yoda. Anyway, because it like releases something or other, like adrenaline or whatnot.
So there, they said that it taps into emotional brain centers and appears to arise in the right brain, whereas most language production occurs in the left cerebral hemisphere of the brain. So that's showing a potential reason for why swearing developed and why it persists. Extraterrestrials, speaking of language, extraterrestrials may have a better way to communicate across space than radio waves or optical beams. A team of scientists suggests that aliens could encode neutrinos. These particles of matter are similar to electrons, but since they have no electric charge, they can pass through anything. This makes them ideal for long-distance travel, as neutrinos are undisturbed by gas, dust, or other matter that can block radio waves and other types of electromagnetic radiation. Astronomers have been scouring the galaxy for decades for alien-produced radio signals, and more recently for non-naturally occurring light pulses as well, but to no avail. Physicist John Learned of the University of Hawaii said, "We really have no clue as to how some advanced civilization might want to transmit to us, nor do we have any really good idea why they would want to transmit to us."
Well, as long as you get the right outlook on it.
"Everything that we're doing is exploratory science. You don't know the game. You don't know if you're in the game. You don't know the rules of the game. That's what makes it so much fun."
This is like going to a singles bar, even though you can't see a possible reason why any woman would ever talk to you.
Yes.
And you are, in fact, covered in burns.
Yes. So they've decided that if there's a civilization similar to ours, which is at the stage of setting up large neutrino detectors, then one would see the signal of a unique signature, and you'd right away say, "What the heck's going on here? That's not a natural signature." So this is something that would really get your attention on the first detection. And then on the second one, you'd be saying, "Huh? What in the world's going on?" He's a rather earthy way of speaking.
Is his last name really Learned?
For a physicist. He says that the best part of this is that the data may already be on hand. "We've been recording these stars for over 100 years now, but the way astronomers were doing the analysis, they would not have seen any such phase jiggling around," Learned said.
Jiggling around.
"It may be there in the data."
Are you being punked right now?
I think so.
By the AP? Okay.
Yeah,
all right. Just checking. I don't understand why we would possibly want to contact the alien life under the supposition that it is, quote, about where we are in terms of development. Because, I mean, anybody we know, we only know for about 5 or 6 minutes before we bomb them. So, I mean, you know, and we're bombing people that are basically, like, living next door to us at this point. So, of course, our first reaction if we found somebody else would, you know, out in the universe, well, can we bomb them? Well, let's do it. So why would we possibly want to make contact with somebody who is just like us? That seems like a fool's errand.
Well, that was the supposition of Reagan's Star Wars defense program, to a certain extent, was, you know, it was like, yes, it was a satellite defense mechanism for protecting us from, you know,
Ruskies.
Other countries and other Ruskies and stuff. But there were also those who said, and of course, we need to be protected for anybody who might come from outer space, because if they come from outer space, they'll be evil and they'll
Seriously.
Try to kill us.
Well, I mean, if you were monitoring this stupid planet, I mean, wouldn't you just be like, "Oh, we totally have to shoot first with these guys," and, you know, because otherwise they're just going to bomb us.
Yeah. People in the early stages of dementia may not be able to tell truth from lies and sarcasm from sincerity, a new study finds. The findings could help doctors diagnose dementia, such as Alzheimer's, earlier. If somebody has a strange behavior and they stopped understanding things like sarcasm and lies, they should see a specialist who can make sure this isn't the start of one of these diseases, said researcher Catherine Rankin, a neuropsychologist at the University of California in San Francisco. Rankin and her colleagues asked about 175 people, more than half of whom had a neurodegenerative disorder like dementia, to watch videos of people talking. The videotaped people would sometimes drop in a lie or use sarcasm, which they signaled with body language and verbal cues. After watching the videos, the participants answered yes or no questions about what they'd seen. And it turned out that healthy older participants did very well at distinguishing truth from lies, but older adults with dementia affecting their frontal lobes could not detect sarcasm. So they want to find people early because they believe they can actually treat Alzheimer's a little bit better if they see it early. So if you know someone who doesn't get your jokes, they might have Alzheimer's.
Or maybe they're just Presbyterian.
Or maybe you're just not funny.
Yeah. Maybe they don't want to tell you. Maybe it's easier just to pretend that they have a degenerative brain disorder.
Oh, sorry. It's my senility.
Yeah. I'm sure you're hilarious to other people.
That's all the science.
All right, there you go. There's your Science on the March. Brought to you by Squires Electric. That is squireselectric.com, 503-252-1609 here at Legion of News at Cascadia.fm.
An English man disguised himself as a mannequin and tried to take pictures of women in a shopping mall bathroom. University of Birmingham student Joel Hardman was caught trying to secretly film women on his mobile phone, according to the Birmingham Mail.
Uh-huh.
The 22-year-old from Edgbaston was seen sneaking into a woman's toilet dressed like a mannequin with a mask and a wig earlier this month. When security guards nabbed him after he'd emerged from the locked cubicle, Hardman admitted to performing a sexual act and said, quote, "I've been a bit weird."
Yeah. Well, okay. Fair enough. Give him points for self-assessment.
He also told police he found the sound of women on the toilet sexually exciting and said, "It's good you've caught me. Maybe now I'll stop."
Now, here's what I don't... Okay, so he took a camera with him, though.
Yes.
So I don't understand why... I mean, it's just... If you're going to do this, take the camera, leave the camera, come back for the camera.
Well, he didn't seem to... Yeah.
You don't have to be there for that, as Chuck Berry proved. You can just, you know, wire that thing up and then go home for a while.
Well, police found three images of women's feet taken beneath cubicle doors on his mobile phone and an audio recording of a flushing toilet.
Okay.
Hardman told the magistrate's court he felt sexual gratification out of everything that goes on in women's toilets.
I just don't. Okay, well, whatever.
When asked to explain his outfit, he said he wore the clothes to a fancy dress party and then tried it out at the shopping mall.
This story is so British. This story couldn't be more British.
He said he confessed he had done this before in women's bathrooms at a university campus, but he'd moved to the shopping center because it was busier.
All right.
So,
okay.
There you are.
Yeah, that's swell.
He dressed up nice.
Yeah, from a fancy dress party.
See, you would never see that in Portland.
No.
You would not see a guy like in a tuxedo.
No.
Taking pictures in a lady's bathroom.
No, it's always... Well, you know, so I was... you know, they've actually had to close many of the bathrooms, like at some of the sort of like the department stores and stuff, like around the downtown area, because apparently there was just like this rash of just people, guys, whatever, just sort of going in there and trying to like take illicit photos of other people using the John, and they just didn't have enough security guards to sort of, you know, just like be standing around in the immediate vicinity
How is that such a popular activity?
I don't know, but I guess people would come out and go like, "Hey, there's a guy in there and he's trying to take photographs of, you know, of people or whatever." And so the security guard would have to go in and go like, "What's all this now?" But apparently it was just like it was mushrooming and they just didn't have enough security guards, and so they just had to start like at a lot of the stores like having like one bathroom that everybody had to be funneled into so that they had enough security guards to sort of like staff the whole thing. It's all very weird. It's a strange world.
Gas prices surged last week, and this week isn't expected to see a reduction. GasBuddy.com is an online site that assists motorists to find the cheapest local gas prices. Analyst Patrick DeHaan says people returning rental cars in various locations near airports, such as Orlando, can really get hit with high prices.
Suspecting travelers return their rental cars, fill them up at the last station before the airport, and lo and behold, they don't even look at the pump. But we've heard the station is charging in excess of $5.50. In fact, in the last 2 days, we've seen it posting prices at $5.69 a gallon.
I dispute that people, quote, don't even look at the pump. I mean, you look at it and shrug and go, well, what are you going to do? But
you look at it
pump.
And you go, oh, I'm an idiot. I should have gotten gas before I got back to the airport.
Oh, yeah. No, that's the thing. That is like just after don't take that thing of letting the rental car company fill it themselves because it's like $14 a gallon or whatever.
Yeah.
No, you fill it like downtown as far away from the airport as you possibly can without actually emptying the tank on the way there.
Yes. DeHaan says California is seeing some of the most expensive gas.
Looking at Coronado, certainly among the highest areas in San Diego state.
Let's all cry for the people in Coronado, by the way. I don't know. It's I need all this gas to get to my golden house.
Looking at Coronado, certainly among the highest areas in San Diego stations there, 469 to 479.
Yeah, people in Coronado can eat me. That's what they can do. You know Coronado.
I've been to Coronado.
Yeah, those people can. Yeah. Yeah, they can suck one.
It's got a beautiful hotel that was used in the movie The Stuntman, and also Some Like It Hot, and a whole lot of like really just insanely stinking rich people.
Coronado's a place that you drive through, and that's what you do. You drive through because you can't afford to stop anywhere. But I mean, there's that bridge that goes. There's the Coronado Bridge, and it's like you can't really stop there because there's no place there that I could afford to go, and plus they would have some guy that came along and moved me on out. Like immediately there would be somebody who'd broom me out to the edges of the city and get rid of me.
Well, DeHaan also says the earlier you fill up, the cheaper your gas will probably
be. Prices could rise in anywhere from an average of 3 to 8 cents a gallon. So keep that in mind. Keep your tank full as the week progresses.
This is stupid advice. Yeah. This is just dumb.
Yeah. Yeah.
No. Right. No. The hell with that guy.
He realizes you're going to eventually have to, like, just replace that gas anyway, right?
Run out of your house right now.
Yeah. Okay. It seems air traffic controllers are having a lot of trouble staying awake these days, as we addressed earlier in this show.
Yes.
On Saturday, a controller in Miami was suspended after he was caught napping on the job, right after he'd received a briefing from the importance of professionalism. And then the next day, the Ray LaHood went on Fox News Sunday, as we mentioned earlier, and said that controllers had to get at least 9 hours.
Are we just doing the same story twice?
Kind of, but no, skip it. I was going to share
then
more.
Then you just tore it in half.
I'm just tearing it up. I hate this.
Die that story.
Stupid story.
If you find it really interesting, go ahead.
I was going to share a little more, but you know something? Screw it. I should have
done it next hour.
I should have coupled that with. Well, I can't now. Now it's all torn.
Yeah, torn it into little pieces. Yeah. Okay.
Tokyo Electric Power Company, for the first time, it's outlined a plan to get its Fukushima Daiichi nuclear plant under control, noting the whole process would take 6 to 9 months.
They've outlined a plan for the first time.
Yes, they have finally outlined. They have outlined a plan.
Okay.
To
were they just
the
resting up because it was a long meeting and they had to make sure they had the right amount of energy?
Yes.
Okay. They were waiting for their PowerPoint program to.
Well, there was really no point in rushing because everything was all radioactive.
Okay.
The government says the plan is realistic, but some experts contend it's little more than educated guesses, since TEPCO doesn't know what may lie ahead. Pressured by the government to improve its communications, the company said it will follow a two-stage roadmap to end the crisis. The first step will involve decreasing the radiation leaks over the next 3 months. And then restoring the cooling system to cut the amount of radiation being produced. After that, it hopes it can bring the plant to a cold shutdown, at which point it would no longer pose a threat. Fears of new leaks have been increasing over the last few days, as the company reported that radiation levels in the sea near one of the reactors had shot up to 6,500 times the legal limit. Although the BBC says people are pleased that they have been given some idea of how long the crisis would last, the Associated Press reports that those who were forced to flee were frustrated that their exile was not going to end soon. The roadmap was outlined as Secretary of State Hillary Clinton made a brief visit to the country in a show of support for the Japanese. She said, "We pledge our steadfast support for you and your future recovery. We are very confident that Japan will demonstrate the resilience that we have seen during this crisis in the months ahead."
She said from a jet plane that was screaming overhead at 6,500 miles an hour.
Another one of those things, though, when Hillary Clinton is looking at you and saying, "We are very confident that you will take care of this," you just kind of go, "Yes, ma'am.
We have your family in a secret location. We'll send you their fingers one by one."
Let's do entertainment.
All right, here's your entertainment news for Monday, April 18th, 2011.
Actor Patrick Stewart talked to the Sunday Times about supporting Dignity in Dying, a campaign which supports assisted death. He told them, "I have a strong feeling that should the time come for me, having had no role in my birth, I should like there to be a choice I might make about how I die." The 70-year-old was diagnosed 5 years ago with coronary heart disease. Wacky Nicolas Cage got arrested over the weekend for fighting with his wife in the street in New Orleans. Apparently, he and the wife were out drinking, and they went back to the house that Cage insisted was the one that they had rented. She said, no, that's not the house that we're renting. And then he grabbed her by her upper arm and pulled her to what he believed was the correct address. A few minutes later, he tried to get into a taxi, and concerned onlookers flagged down a police car. An officer drove up, later wrote in his report that he immediately observed that Cage was heavily intoxicated and ordered him out of the cab. And you kind of figure at this point, it probably would have just ended. He was drunk. Yeah, he'd had a little bit of a tiff with the wife. Except this is when he's alleged to have started arguing with the officer.
Someone's here. The time is right for fighting in the street.
And that was when he was taken into custody.
Okay.
He's charged with one count of domestic violence and one count of public drunkenness. He was released from custody with the bail was $11,000.
Now,
he was actually bailed out, by the way, by Dog the Bounty Hunter.
That's fantastic.
He posted the $11,000 bond over the weekend. And he was asked about it by E! Entertainment, and Dog the Bounty Hunter said, I am a dedicated fan of Mr. Cage and will not be granting interviews about my client as I wish to respect his privacy. I performed my duties as a bail bondsman and not in connection with our show. This is what I do for a living. There are two sides to my job. I release my clients after they've been arrested, and I pick them up if they don't show up in court. I do not believe the latter will be the case for Mr. Cage.
Well, so it was domestic violence, but it doesn't sound like he punched his wife.
No,
or did he?
He grabbed her.
Oh, I see. So that's...
So I guess that can count.
The domestic violence thing is a little frustrating because it does seem like a one-size-fits-all designation.
Yeah.
You know, and like, not that you should be grabbing people, but you should be doing that before you punch people. But it seems like they're all under this one umbrella of whatever. So that's a little unpleasant.
And also, it's like why domestic violence and not assault if you get physical with
somebody? Because I don't even know that grabbing somebody is assault. I mean, that's what I'm saying. It's like you can't have one umbrella because that then just diminishes the crime of actually like punching someone's teeth out. If they're both domestic violence and they're both assault, it seems like one ought to be, you know, assault, and the other one would be like full-on hella assault. Also, so the Dog the Bounty Hunter thing, is it like, did he just show, is that like the Dr. Phil just going at that time and saying like, I was talking to Britney Spears today. Like, can someone, if you get arrested, can anybody just come and like post your bail? Like if they're the first ones there, if they beat your publicist to the scene and they're like, I got 11 grand. And they go, well, okay.
Like you arrange with a...
But what if you don't? Like what if you got arrested and I just heard on the police scanner? And somebody just, like, beat everybody else to the station and said, I'm here to bail Don out.
I bet you could, because you see that in movies and on TV all the time, where somebody says, well, you can go, and then they walk out.
Who bailed me out?
Yeah, they were unaware that
McLean Stevenson.
Exactly.
Or whoever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably not McLean Stevenson.
Yeah, probably not.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So I wonder if Nicolas Cage even knew, or if he was just like, well, who bailed me out of it? Oh, okay. And just, you know.
Call Dog the Bounty Hunter, he said.
Yeah, I just wonder.
I'm working on my Nick Cage.
Maybe that's his whole thing. Is he just like monitors the police scanner, shows up and bails celebrities out without even asking them?
He's probably got somebody at TMZ who calls him.
Yeah, because then he can say legally like they are my client.
Yeah,
and that's probably a good way to burnish one's reputation.
The Los Angeles County Health Department is investigating the Playboy Mansion after officials identified Legionella bacteria in the Whirlpool Spa, where hundreds of people fell ill after attending or working at a party last month.
Now, is that like Legionnaire's disease?
It is the bacteria that causes Legionnaire's
disease.
I
don't even know what Legionnaire's disease is, actually.
Well, it's a bacterial infection that causes coughing, chills, and fever.
Okay.
Health officials said they've suspected Legionnaire's disease or Pontiac fever in the outbreak, but they haven't ruled out other bacteria and viruses. About 200 people became sick after the Domain Fest Global Conference, February 1st through 3rd. The three-day conference took place at the Fairmont Hotel in Santa Monica. On the second night, there was a party at the Sky Bar on Sunset Boulevard. And on the third night, the finale party took place at the Playboy Mansion. Within 48 hours after leaving the mansion, scores of attendees reportedly came down with symptoms including fever, respiratory problems, and violent headaches. Infection usually occurs by breathing in mist from a water source contaminated with bacteria, such as hot tubs, air conditioning systems, and showers. The bacteria are not spread from person to person, according to CDC, but inhaled in water vapor. Some of those who became ill said they suspected a fog machine that was used at the party.
Well, really, I mean, you got to give it up to them for having, I mean, all things considered, like a spotless health record, because this is the only time I can ever remember anybody ever claiming they came down with anything after being at the Playboy Mansion.
So, I know, and you think...
All things being equal, yeah. that sounds like they're really batting 1,000 there.
I guess, you know, the Playboy, you want to keep things pretty clean.
Well,
I would think.
I got to tell you, it's like that. The time we toured this swingers club.
Yeah.
And it's like, and it just, everywhere you go, just reeks of rubbing alcohol, you know, and ammonia or whatever, because they're just like sponging everything down constantly. So, all right.
There was a shock in soap opera circles when ABC announced its decision to cancel All My Children and One Life to Live. But it turns out the move was not particularly surprising. Soaps have been getting the axe for years. Unfortunately, the way in which the network said it would replace the two shows that have been running for a combined 83 years is with lifestyle programs with reality TV hosts, and it's a stark reminder of how viewing habits have changed. The Guardian newspaper notes only 4 daytime soaps will remain, down from 20 in their heyday. The actors did not hide their anger when they learned the news, many of them from journalists. One star said on Fox News, "If you're not an over-tanned Guido who gets drunk and punches someone in the face, where do you fit into television anymore?"
Well, that's a fair question.
Yeah, it really is. And finally, police in New Jersey arrested 21-year-old Nicholas Tracy last week. He's accused of stealing $500,000 in jewelry and other items from Jon Bon Jovi and 3 of the rock star's neighbors. Tracy allegedly stole over $100,000 in jewelry from Bon Jovi and was charged with 4 counts of third-degree burglary and 3 counts of second-degree theft.
It does, back on the soap opera thing for a second, it does sort of prompt the question where those actors and actresses go, because... If you're one of those guys who, you know, looks like his first name is like Ashton or Lancelot or something, and, you know, and you, like, where else are you going to act unless they bring back Dynasty? I mean, there's, you know, those like soap looking guys who don't fit in anywhere except in a soap opera. I mean, because they look like soap opera actors.
Yeah, very few of them go on to be Nathan Fillion, for example. Who was on One Life to Live.
There's Nathan Fillion. There's Ryan Phillippe. There's Rick Springfield.
Yep.
We have somebody else the other day.
Kelly Ripa.
There was somebody else the other day that we were mentioning. That it was some guy that had been on some soap opera.
Ricky Martin was on
General Hospital.
Yeah.
Yeah, but most of those guys, especially anybody who's over the age of 50 and has like a salt and pepper mustache, you're never going to get cast in anything except like bad porn if you're those guys. So.
Well, I hope so. I hope a lot of those people have been smart and put their money away, because some of those actors have been doing the soap. Like the people who play the elder statesman of the family. Some of those people have been doing these shows.
Oh, it's a gravy train.
Since they were like in their 20s.
Well, there was that chick who died a couple years ago.
Like Susan Lucci started as a teenager.
Right. Well, there was some woman who died a few years ago, and she started on, I don't know, Guiding Light or something, but literally like started when it was a radio show in like 1930 and died finally in like 1992 or 95 or something. And I mean,
she's the woman who played Lila Quartermain on One Life to Live.
Lila Quartermain,
yeah,
really?
I think that was the one who played Lila Quartermain.
But it was like her whole career was
like
that.
She was like in Citizen Kane or something. So,
yeah. She was like, she got the gig and then just like had it for 60 years or something. But here's the thing. You know, the thing about soaps is, you know, that's a group of people who could actually get away with starting some sort of like a pay to watch service for that show. Because there may not, I mean, like with a soap opera, I mean, they may say, well, you know, like, you know, there aren't as many people watching soap operas. But that's a relative statement. There's still millions of people who watch soap operas. Maybe not tens of millions, but there's still millions of people. If you could get 15% of the soap audience to kick in X dollars or whatever to watch that show every week, every month, or whatever, that is, I mean, maybe not making what they were before, but that's, you know, that's probably a substantial chunk of change.
Well, and there's also that soap cable network. So instead of, mostly what they've done is just run reruns of soap operas. One of the coolest things they did is they ran reruns of General Hospital from back in, like, the Luke and Laura days.
Yeah.
And I remember watching that and going, wow, those production values were really bad.
And it's so rapey.
But, they could actually, you know, they could find someone to finance it and produce it and turn the soap network into, you know, a soap network. And then people could keep watching the soaps on a dedicated cable network.
Or to go back to an idea that I had the other day when I was talking about a reality show instead of a show. What they ought to do is some network. I'm surprised that nobody's done this. And maybe somebody has and I've just missed it. I am surprised that no network has done this, where they have a real show. And then they have a spin-off show, which is the scripted behind the scenes. So in other words, you would have an actual, you know, you would have an actual Larry Sanders show, and then you would have The Larry Sanders Show as a, you know, behind the scenes scripted comedy as a separate program. I'm surprised they haven't done that with 30 Rock, you know, where they actually have the actual show, even if it's only once a month. They do the actual live variety show once a month, and then 30 Rock, the sitcom, continues. I mean, it's like, that just seems like such a no-brainer, revenue-wise. So they should do that with, like a soap dish sort of a thing, where they have an actual soap, and then, like, every other week or something, they have as, like, a bonus feature, the scripted zany behind the scenes.
Well, it's like some shows are doing, like, the webisodes that are just specific little episodes that are just for the web, and they're like offshoots.
Right.
Like Big Love did that. They had some stuff where you got to see some background of like how the family met Margene and some things like that. But they were just little like 20-minute webisodes that you had to go onto HBO's website and watch.
It was a thing that Bruce Agler was like the hugest fan of doing this. And not that it's not a good idea. It's a great idea. It was just one of those like, who has the time and who's going to write it sort of a thing. But he, for the longest time, I think even back when we were doing terrestrial radio, he agitated forever that we needed to create some special, like, I think it was before we were even online. I think it was like back in 1999 or something. But he was like pushing for us to do like some miniature, like once a week scripted, like 30-minute, you know, quote, behind the scenes series that, you know, sort of like a Burns and Allen thing, where we would do the Rick Emerson Show Monday through Friday, and then we would have like this special half an hour sort of like sitcom, which is like an alleged behind the scenes of the show, where everybody was just completely insane and just loathed one another, which is a great idea. And it's like, I think we were launching
this. And so very close to the truth.
And he was like, well, you know, like, now we're going to be online. You should totally do that thing where it's the behind the scenes show. And I was like, okay, I'll put that on the list of things to do. Sorry, I'm so tired. Anyway. Wim Wim Wazzle, and so forth. Are we done with entertainment news?
Yes, we are.
All right, there you go. There's your entertainment news for Monday, April 18th, or Tax Day to you and me. That is Monday, April 18th, 2011. Here's Don Taylor.
A Toledo, Ohio church will be giving away a house. Pastor Tony Scott, Candyman, says Easter Sunday worshipers can fill out an application, and there are some strings attached.
What kind of this house?
You must have a full-time job. You must be gainfully employed. You must be able to afford the maintenance, the taxes on the house.
Scott says all people have to do is come to Sunday's Easter services next Sunday and fill out an application.
We have a committee of people from the church and the community that will go through every single application. So every family will have an opportunity to win.
So just in case the idea of winning eternal salvation for your soul isn't quite enough, you might also get a house.
Yeah.
Okay, excellent.
And of course, I'm thinking of Tony Todd, this candy.
I wonder what you were
Scott.
Doing right there, right?
But for some reason, I saw the name Tony Scott, and instead of thinking like Ridley Scott's brother,
or Randolph Scott,
I thought Tony Todd.
Yeah.
And I got, but wouldn't it be great if you went to church and your pastor was Tony Todd,
or Randolph Scott?
Maybe Randolph Scott. Prince Harry is a captain now. You can call him Captain Harry Wales. The prince was promoted.
They just call me Captain Harry Wales if it's all the same to you.
The prince was promoted from lieutenant last week after serving as an officer in the army for 5 years. The 26-year-old, who will be his brother's best man at the royal wedding later this month. And for those of you who are over the age of, say, 35 or so, I'd like to repeat again, that is Prince Harry, 26.
Yes, we're ancient.
Harry. He could return to Afghanistan as early as spring of next year. He's publicly expressed his desire to return to the front lines, but an earlier tour of Afghanistan was forced to end after press leaks. Now that he's a captain, the prince will get a bump in salary of a little more than $11,000 to earn around $73,000 a year.
I really loathe the royals. I know that I shouldn't, and I know they've never done anything to me. They've never impacted my life at all in any way, to the best of my knowledge, except for interrupting programming when I was a kid and the princess, you know, the Charles and Di thing. They've never done one thing to me, but goddamn, they irritate me. Just like nobody's business.
I developed a real affection for Prince Charles, though, after I saw this documentary that he did about architecture, because he's just a huge fan and apparently an aficionado of architecture. And there was something where they traveled around with him, and he went around England and Britain, and he looked at stuff, and he just talked kind of off the cuff about architecture. And he's really actually just an incredibly intelligent and really likable man.
I actually have strangely enough, I have a bizarre affection for him as well, based on the fact that when he was a young boy, Mad Magazine made a crack about how Alfred E. Newman and Prince Charles looked a lot alike back when he was like 12. And he actually wrote a letter to Mad Magazine, and it said, I swear to God, and the letter said something like, it said, I don't, not a bit, so jolly well stow it. And they had like some paper analyst come in and analyze the typography in the paper and the crest, and they deduced that it was in fact real.
Nice.
And so I like the idea that he took the time to write jolly well stow it to Mad Magazine. And with that, we bring down the curtain on this another exciting episode of Legion of News. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic Professor Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agler, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. As always, we thank you for listening, and this program is available later on the day via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com. The Rick Emerson Show is next at rickemersonshow.com, where we welcome new listeners Tracy and the guy Eric.
Tracy and the guy.
Thank you for listening. Have a fantastic Monday. We will see you again tomorrow for Legion of News.